go a different way, and that's where we, you know, ended up here. Is what I realized was there are so many people that are so closed-minded. They have such a fixed mindset that no other information to them can get inside their box of their mind. And I will say that I've had my mind changed in government about some things that I ran on, whether it be homelessness or crime. And I've had to really take a look at why I believed what I believed. And is there a better way to do it? Because, again, as a person that's been married over 25 years, have three well-adjusted kids, a business with roughly 60 or 70 employees, there's always an ebb and flow of decision-making, and you just want to be your best. So what I've done today is I have a few examples of governments or in government, both electeds and appointed individuals. And I'm not going to say just letting us down, but I will say that some examples of reasons why people need to pay really, really close attention to their electeds and what their electeds are doing and who they're supporting and how they're getting to the decisions they're reaching. And I'm bringing on a few guests today to give their accounts, firsthand accounts, so you can get it straight from them. In the second half of the show, I'm going to bring back Councilwoman Audette from the city of Reading. As we've been working on something for quite some time, we were going to do videos over the last couple weeks, but there's just the more strings you pull, the deeper things tend to go. So I've asked her to come back and give us an update so none of you are kind of left wondering where that is. And I'm bringing all this to light because I feel like it's the only way forward to have a safer, more affordable world for our future generations. And I'm not perfect, not by a long shot. But I'll be darned if I don't invest my time as a public servant getting people to wake up and realize what's going on around them. Every issue I talk about today, if you choose not to believe the people or what is said, research it for yourself, but just don't discredit it because it doesn't fit in the box or maybe you aren't open to new information or from the people that are giving it. So being Easter Sunday, I'm going to spend just a couple minutes, so indulge me, on one of the first big, what I believe, are screw-ups in the history of government and a firsthand account of that realization. But for many of us, we know this isn't really a screw-up, but it was all part of the great plan. So indulge me here for a minute. So Jesus spent roughly 3 years proclaiming who he was. Of course, he was ridiculed, mocked, shunned by the leaders of his day. On Good Friday, over 2,000 years ago, Jesus was hanging on a cross. And I'm going to read the account briefly of Jesus' death from the book of Matthew, starting in chapter 27, verse 45. From noon until 3 in the afternoon, darkness came over the land. About 3 in the afternoon, Jesus cried out in a loud voice, my God, why have you forsaken me? When some of those standing there heard this, they said, he's calling Elijah. Immediately, one of them ran and got a sponge. He filled it with wine vinegar, put it on a staff, and offered it to Jesus to drink. The rest said, now leave him alone. Let's see if Elijah comes to save him. And when Jesus had cried out again in a loud voice, he gave up his spirit. At that moment, the curtain of the temple was torn in two from top to bottom. The earth shook, the rocks split, and the tombs broke open. The bodies of many holy people who had died were raised to life. They came out of the tombs after Jesus' resurrection and went into the holy city and appeared to many people. When the centurion and those with him who were guarding Jesus saw the earthquake and all that had happened, they were terrified and exclaimed, surely he was the Son of God. Now, for me, I got to tell you, if I was at that time and there's people that have been raised from the dead and walking around, it would freak me out, of course, and be like, hey, what are you up to? Where have you been? But those Roman soldiers who were just, you know, quote unquote, doing their job, going about their business, and I don't believe they were ever mentioned again in the Bible, but I'd be curious if they became believers or followers of Christ, or did they just go back to work on Monday as if nothing happened the week before? I don't know. And that's one of the, great mysteries. And so when I read that, you know, and I hear that, you have people that are doing a job or they're listening to the radio or they're in government, whether they're electeds or they're appointed or they're, you know, part of the bureaucracy, and something comes up, does it make them say, wait a minute, that's not what I, not necessarily just believe, but I don't believe that is fact or I should be doing that. So my first guest was a highly respected public information officer for the state of California's Department of Public Health. He was there for over 14 years. he discovered information from a high-ranking Biden cabinet official that the vaccines were literally killing people. His job was to be a critical thinker and educate the public on issues of health and of health concern. With us right now is Mr. Ronald Owens to discuss the events that unfolded just a short time ago. Mr. Owens, how are you doing today, sir?
Good morning. Good morning. He is risen. He is risen indeed. Hallelujah.
Absolutely, sir. Thank you. So tell us, you're my first guest. You're going to be here for, 10 to 15 minutes. And I'd like you to tell us just the story, and I know you got to condense it because you've been on talk shows, radio shows, TV shows, talking about your story. But tell us how this information was brought to you and how you felt that you could not just give a company or a state or a federal national narrative and had to bring light. Because as a critical thinker, you have a responsibility, and you were there for 14 years, highly respected at the state of California. So give us your firsthand account of what happened.
Well, on April 14, 2022, I discovered what Department of Health and Human Services Secretary Javier Becerra, and he said this on a White House Convening on Equity Summit, and he's talking about the COVID-19 vaccines. He said, quote, "We know these vaccines are killing people of color, black, Latino, indigenous people at about 2 times the rate of white Americans," close quote. When I discovered that quote, that video, which is, by the way, still in the White House's official YouTube channel, I was shocked. And I replayed it over and over and over again just to get the context, and I was aghast. I was really shocked. So I did some research, and I discovered, according to the Vaccine Adverse Event Recording System, that these COVID-19 vaccines, as Becerra said in April of 2022, was killing people.
And let me just, for the listeners, as a black man yourself, when you heard that about the vaccine killing minorities or people of color, like, how did that impact you personally as a black man yourself?
Well, it impacted me personally, but it also, if you analyze the statement, Becerra, by the way, who announced he was running for governor 2 weeks ago, he said that we know these vaccines are killing people, period. Now, he said that we know the vaccines are killing people of color, black, Latino, indigenous people at about 2 times the rate of white Americans. But if you analyze his quote, he also acknowledged that the COVID-19 vaccine was also killing white Americans in addition to people of color.
Sure. No, so go ahead and continue.
So I sent this information to my boss, and I included data from the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System that indicated deaths at that time on April 8, 2022, there were 26,976 deaths. There were more than 149,000 hospitalizations, thousands of urgent care indicators on theirs. More than 187,000 doctor office visits. People were suffering from anaphylaxis, Bell's palsy, miscarriages, heart attacks, myocarditis, pericarditis, permanently disabled, thrombocytopenia, low platelet, life-threatening issues, shingles, and severe allergic reactions. I know those are a lot of multisyllabic medical terms, but in essence, people were dying from seizures, strokes. People were dying from heart attacks. And this was reported, indicated, more than 3 years ago. So I shared this information with my deputy director, and her first response was, quote, "Thanks for your email, Ron," period. That was it. There was no, like, I need to move this forward. And I advised in that particular email of April 18, 2022, that the directorate needed to be apprised of this, that the Department of Health and Human Services here in California, Dr. Mark Gawley, needs to be apprised, and also Governor Gavin Newsom. Now, whether my superiors informed of the chain of command, I don't know, but I did my due diligence. 6 months later, I was tracking all of the data on the vaccine adverse event reporting system, and I indicated an uptick in deaths and hospitalizations and urgent care visits and anaphylaxis, et cetera, et cetera. And the response in October of 2022 was that, number one, my personal beliefs were not consistent with the department. Number two, if you need to be familiar with what our policy was regarding COVID-19 vaccine, here's an intranet link. And number three, we're not to receive any more of your emails. And number four, we're concerned that you're conducting research using state time and state resources. In other words, it was a veiled threat. The information that I provided them was contrary to the California Department of Public Health messaging that COVID-19 vaccines are safe and effective. The information basically debunked that messaging, and my higher-ups did not like it.
Now, you had been there for 14 years, highly respected, and so this process that you were going through, we haven't prepped this interview. I just know of your story. And when I wanted to get different people to come in who have been at the state or federal level and then county and then city level of breakdown of government and messaging and whether it's nefarious or whether it's just total incompetence, you had done the same type of process, I'm assuming, in other endeavors or other stories as a public information officer. I mean, is that an accurate statement that you've researched other things that you were working on in your role at the state?
Yes, because 6 months prior to this, this is just one part of my story, Supervisor Clyde. 6 months prior to this, I came across some information. Actually, it was an email that was sent to me from the deputy director who was going to post on the department's website that ivermectin is a dangerous drug and stay away from it. And I knew that was not true. So I conducted some research again, and this was in October of 2021, and I came across a Senate hearing that was held by Wisconsin Senator Ron Johnson. He featured a Dr. Pierre Corey, who testified in December of 2020 when he indicated that he, Dr. Corey, treated more than 8,000 people with properly dosed ivermectin. Not only did he treat, but he cured. And many of the people that he cured were people of color. I was excited as a man of color. I mean, I love all humanity. But I was excited to come across this information, and I shared it with my management in October of 2022. It was the most important email I had sent in my state career, and I was magnanimous in sharing with them that the California Department of Public Health could take the lead statewide, the national lead throughout the United States, because CDPH is a very large public health department, even the international lead in fighting COVID-19. The response from my management was, number one, I'm not a doctor. I didn't present myself as a doctor. And number two, CDPH is not in the position to approve such treatment. So in other words, the 40 million Californians who are properly served by the California Department of Public Health, we're deferring to the feds. And I was thinking at that time, we need to think out of the box. Why are we deferring to the feds? So, yes, as a public information officer, we are doing a disservice if we're not critical thinkers, if we're not researching information and sharing with our management.
You know, I'm speechless, which you're not really supposed to be on the radio. It's called dead air. But Mr. Owens, I'm so thankful that that you had the quote unquote the audacity to buck the narrative and say, hey, like, this is not okay. We can't get this information out in this way. Now, so we have about 2 or 3 minutes left, but walk me through what your life has been like since those emails, and then, you know, give us a wrap-up. It's very quick, and I'll bring you back on for sure. But talk to us really quick about when and how you left the state and what you've been up to since.
Well, I prematurely retired on December 31st. They disciplined me. They wrote a counseling memorandum, and basically in that counseling memorandum, they said that I was supposed to behave for the next year, and if I behave, I could petition to have that counseling memorandum removed from my personnel file. Supervisor Carr, I knew this was a setup. They were setting up in order to discipline me if I was going to speak up within that year, and I wasn't going to be muzzled. So I prematurely retired on December 31st, 2023. I immediately incurred a 55% pay cut. I'm sharing this with you, as I shared with other boards of supervisors across California, not for my own aggrandizement or self-importance. I'm sharing this because I would not have jeopardized a low six-figure salary, a comfortable position, working for the state more than 29 years, if I had not was not convinced that these COVID-19 vaccines were killing people. So I've been traveling with Julie Threet, Butte County resident. She and I have been traveling, appearing before boards of supervisors across California, and making public comment, during the public comment period on matters not on the agenda. Doing, informing the boards of supervisors what California Department of Public Health should have done more than 3 years ago. When I retired, my oath as a state employee to uphold the state constitution, the U.S. Constitution, did not expire. So I'm doing my due diligence, informing you, and have informed your 295 other colleagues throughout the state of California with notification. I've done that twice. And also, I'm appearing in person.
Yeah, and I want to just make sure I clarify. Ron is, when he refers to me as Supervisor Cry, I am Kevin Cry in this fashion, as my radio show is just my own personal show. So this isn't an extension. But again, of course, I'm a politician, and then am I not here? But I am there, etc. But I want to make sure people understand something Ron said, and before we say goodbye, Ron, this is the one thing I really want people to grab onto. He's explaining something that just happened 3 years ago. 3 years ago. And for people that don't learn from their mistakes are bound to repeat them. Ron, I believe, is not asking for his pound of flesh. He doesn't want, when something like this happens again, because it will, because history always repeats itself, he's trying to, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, Ron, but you want to write the system, make sure this never happens again, and when other PIOs or people that are given a position to be in a place of public trust, that those people are able to do the research, do their job, and bring out the information. Is that pretty correct?
That's correct. My role is to basically urge the boards of supervisors across California to stop promoting, stop administering, and stop distributing COVID-19 vaccines. Because as we learn, there are wide, people are getting triple cancers from these COVID-19 vaccines. It's even affecting people's brains. There was a study that came out recently where it's caused people to be more suicidal, to be more homicidal. These COVID-19 vaccines have affected people's cognitive ability.
Well, Ron, and
this is what we're learning.
Yeah, well, absolutely. And when you say that, all I'm asking for people to do is, and Ron, I'm going to say thank you. Happy Easter. Thank you for calling in and taking some of your Easter Sunday time with all of us. And I have listeners all over the country, but especially here in Shasta County. So thank you for that time, Ron, and have a great rest of your day.
Thank you. Can I add one more thing?
Sure.
If people want to read the emails that I discussed on my website, go to muzzledtruth.com.
Muzzledtruth.com. That's muzzledtruth.com. Check it out. Thank you, Ron. Have a great day.
Thank you. Goodbye.
So here's where this lays the groundwork is, and just so you know, we're not going to take a break. We're going to just plow right through. No commercials today. It's my show. I pay for it. It's my time. So here is why this is relevant, and this sets the tone, because that is a state federal type issue, right? So now I'm going to jump to, we have a special board meeting of the Air Pollution Control Board. And the guest I'm going to bring on for this one is me, and I am a county supervisor, chairman actually of the Air Pollution Control Board, as well as the Board of Supervisors. And I'm going to talk about a situation that has come up that is so egregious and bad. And I'm not pointing fingers saying it's nefarious or there was some ill intent, but it is the massive breakdown of bureaucracy, governments, employees, whether it's indifference or whatever. So if you look on the Air Pollution Control Board agenda, it's a special board meeting this Tuesday. It is going to be at 8:30 out at the Shasta Lake City Council Chambers, because the Shasta County Board of Supervisors is under a remodel with our audio and visual equipment, and it's going to be great, I'll tell you that. But the Air Pollution Control Board has a special meeting because we've run a deficit of $2 million that goes back to actually information from 2013 and 14. So in the staff report, you're going to get a chance to read it. And I'm not going to say a ton about it here because I want to make sure that Sean Ewing, who's our director of resource management, and I'll tell you, he is phenomenal. He was appointed this last year. He's only worked for the county a short time. He comes from the private industry, and when he came to the county, he came to the county as a public servant saying, I want to make a difference in my community. It wasn't about how much money he could make or the retirement he had the opportunity for, but he saw the opportunity a little over a couple years ago to come make a difference. Now, I've never asked him, did he come because of the change and direction of the Board of Supervisors, who maybe was really actually asking questions that really hadn't been asked for years in government. And so whatever reason he came, and then the Paul Hellman, the resource management director, retired, and through some controversy, he was appointed. And when I say controversy, it was controversy that people think that he hadn't given enough time or whatever. But here's what he did. He uncovered something along with our auditor control at Nolde Short. Now, I'm going to say this. Nolde Short and Mr. Sean Ewing, I was on the phone with both of them past 9 o'clock last night, just fact-checking some more stuff. The three of us got on a call as they're preparing for Easter, and I talked to each of them in different capacities over the past few days about this. And we were able to all jump on a call just so I could hear it. So neither one of them have any blame or responsibility to any of this. But here's the reality. There is a $2 million deficit. And I'm going to read to you from June 28th, 2016. Now, this problem started in 2013-14. But I'm going to read to you the minutes, and I'm going to tell you who was in the meeting. The chairman was Leonard Modi at the time, and the board members were David Kehoe, Kristen Schrader, Les Baugh, and Francie Sullivan. Now, Les Baugh was absent from the June 28th, 2016 meeting. But I'm going to read here, and this item was pulled from consent. And I'm going to read exactly just the minutes. That way, there's no my interpretation or spin of it. This is what the public has to go on. Resource Management and Administration Community Education Manager Ronnie Harmon provided the proposed Air Quality Management District 2016-17 budget to the Air Pollution Control Board, APCB. In response to questions by ACPB member Kehoe, Ms. Harmon confirmed the APCB is currently deficit spending, expenditures exceeding revenue by approximately $500,000. And within the next 2 to 3 years, there may be a need to augment the fund balance or reduce expenditures. In response to questions by APCB member Modi, Ms. Harmon confirmed deficit spending has occurred for over 10 years. 10 years. She added, revenue is being collected in the fund balance on an ongoing basis. Mr. Modi stated the city of Reading should be aware that Shasta County would include the city in a request for funds if necessary to cover a projected deficit as agreed to at the time the city became a member of APCB. In response to questions by APCB, member Schrader, Director of Resource Management Rick Simon, clarified the use of the term reserve funds is incorrect and referred to the fund as carryover funds. The fund receives revenue on a revolving and ongoing basis from various funding sources. The funds are available, but not necessarily immediately, as programs must be implemented and expensed prior to receiving revenue. So, in response to questions by APCB member Sullivan and member Schrader, Ms. Harmon confirmed she would provide a report detailing the previous 10-year trend of actual expenditures and revenue and projected revenues and expenditures at the next APCB meeting. By motion made, seconded, Kehoe and Schrader, and unanimously carried, the APCB approved the Air Quality Management District budget for 2016-17 budget of the APCB. So, again, just to reread this first part, is currently deficit spending expenditures exceeding revenue by approximately $500,000. I mean, holy Toledo. Anyway, so now we're going to go to the next meeting they had, November 1st of 2016. It's a Tuesday. Chairman Modi called the meeting to order, and everybody was present, Les Baugh included. So, here's what I really want to get to. Is this issue comes back, they talk about it some more. And this is November 1st of 2016. And what happens, just so everybody understands, we all get put on various boards and commissions by at the county. The chairman does the appointments. So every year when a new chairman is selected, they have all the different boards and commissions. There might be 30 plus or minus. And some of them have, like CERTA, the Shasta Regional Transportation Agency. There's three people on that board, just like the Air Pollution Control Board. So on the CERTA board, it's Kelstrom, myself, and Plummer. On the Air Pollution Control Board, it's myself, Long, and Supervisor Harmon. So there's made up in different ones. When you get dropped into these, I mean, and I'll be the first to tell you. Like, I remember my first LAFCO meeting. I was on LAFCO my first year. And you have people on that board that have literally been on that board. Like Erwin Fust was on that board, former county supervisor. And he's been on LAFCO's board for, like, I think it was like 30 to 40 years, either as a county supervisor or just as a commissioner of, like an at large, slot. And, when you're a freshman supervisor, you're a first year supervisor, you're listening to historical information that goes back to before you were born, and some of those people were in those meetings. So you just kind of, it's kind of overwhelming. So you read up the staff report, you do the best you can, and you just kind of buckle up and figure it out as you go. But what's really, really tough is a lot of people don't ask questions. A lot of people, it's the narrative, it's the status quo. It's, I don't want to rock the boat. I don't want to rock the boat. So what happens is, you get these elected officials who get in these meetings, and they literally might as well have a big rubber stamp, and they just plunk it right on the agenda and say, approved, because they're not doing the work. I mean, the reason why two nonprofit directors got fired on boards I sat on, because, I mean, both of them were doing highly huge amounts of impropriety. And one of them I still have a criminal case against, because it is so gross. And if we don't ask these questions as elected officials, and the public doesn't give us the ability to ask those questions and not just be eviscerated publicly because we're seen as just rabble-rousers or disruptors, then what are we doing? Why do we even have the republic? Why do we have people in office? Why do we have these meetings? Because it's crazy not to ask those questions. So to land this plane for the Air Pollution Control Board, right now we have a deficit of $2 million. the city of Redding and Shasta County are almost going to split that. I believe Anderson's is about $30,000 of that because they're responsible for 3 years. But this comes down to complete inefficiency, laziness of people not following through and doing the work, because you see in this staff report, and I read it from the minutes, that they said, again, APCB is currently deficit spending, expenditures exceeding revenue by approximately $500,000, and within the next 2 to 3 years, there may be a need to augment the fund balance or reduce expenditures. That was 2016, and now it's coming up to our plate in 2025, because Sean Ewing, who's a phenomenal department head, started digging into data and digging into past things, because I asked him, what's the point of this board? I asked him that this year for our very first one, because we had Jack Munns, who's the mayor of Reading, Councilman Mike Latah, Alan Long, and Corky Harmon, Supervisor Harmon and Long. So there was three new elected officials in Latah, Harmon, and Long, and I wanted them, or I should say elected in those roles. And I wanted them to understand what the purpose of this was. And because it was my third year, I was still trying to figure out, what are we even doing? So as Sean looked into stuff and found this with the auditor in January, he brings it to us. And this is a huge issue, because if we don't hold people accountable, we end up in terrible situations. So I'm going to encourage everybody. This Tuesday, our Board of Supervisors meeting is supposed to start at 9 a.m. at the Shasta Lake City Council Chambers, because, again, ours are being refurbished. Come out at 8:30. And learn about how people sleeping on the job, not doing the work, not asking the questions, and how this affects people. Because this is a lot of money, and it's your money. It's my money. It's taxpayers' money. So with me, so I digress. So that's going to be this Tuesday, 8:30 a.m., Shasta Lake. With me in studio today is Councilwoman Tanessa Audette. Good morning, Tanessa.
Good morning.
Happy Easter.
Happy Easter.
Yes, I mean, what a day, right? I know you guys are probably heading to church after this. I went yesterday, as I'd mentioned earlier. So we're just going to jump in, because we had a meeting 2 weeks ago. You were on the radio show for an hour. We discussed budget issues and the positions that were added by the city of Reading. We're trying to get to the bottom of that, but we were going to do some Facebook Live or some Facebook videos, and I was going to post them the last 2 weeks, but the more strings you pulled, I don't want to say the worse it got, but the more questions you had. So I wanted people to come in. I wanted you to come in and give us an update. And we're going to keep going down this road, because just like I just talked about, something that was brought up, you know, 10 years ago is now coming to, you know, rest here this Tuesday. So what is the update on the current budget issues? And I know you are trying to save cops. We have heard that there is a $5 million deficit, which I've heard is actually higher possibly, but you can expand on that. They proposed you cut 12 positions at Reading Fire Department. Reading Police Department. Catch us up on what you've learned.
Good morning. Okay, I know you are
going
halfway through. Yeah.
Well, I'm almost ready for lunch.
Yeah,
I get up and go early.
It's a lot of calories burned trying to do this. But it's true, like, basically I, like everybody else, heard there's a $5 million deficit, and then through the course of that process here, no, it's more like eight, and that just piques my curiosity, like, wait, what are you talking about? Because, you know, when you come onto the council, you're given information, you know, really primarily through the city manager. And so you can trust that, but you need to verify that. I think my very first item 12 after my very first council meeting was, this just isn't enough time to make great decisions. 3 days of information. You get it Thursday night. It gets delivered to you. You go through the packet, and you have to make a decision by Tuesday evening. And so it's just not a lot of time. But any time that they say something that I think just doesn't make sense, or I've heard from the public or other people, like, that you shouldn't just trust that, you should verify it, I usually go and dig and investigate and try to find an answer. So on this, obviously on the budget, this really piqued my curiosity, because we have been told a story, and as that story played along, things just didn't add up. So the city is in a budget crunch, and we have been meeting we started in January, we meet and make we pass our budget in June. So right now is the time to ask all these questions, to investigate, to figure out what's what. So the city manager's solution that he gave us in March was that we're going to lose 12 sworn officer positions. And like I said last time, I've been running campaigns for 10 years in Reading. I've knocked on tens of thousands of doors, and every single person in the public says that public safety is the most important issue. So when you are going to bring us down below where you even added, right, because they added 9 officers, now you want to go below what you even added in 22. So when I pushed back on losing those last 3 officers that the city manager recommended we cut, I was told that they had not hired any positions other than police, fire, and utilities. And this is the only place to cut is basically police, because it's a one-to-one. And at the very next meeting, 5 days later, the audit showed that we actually had added many more positions to departments across the city. So, again, not true, which is a massive red flag for me that I need to go dig around and find some answers. So I did. So I started digging into the financial audits that I had, that I was a part of, so I physically had those. The proposed budget, which is the only physical budget binder that you receive, which I have now subsequently found out that is not the budget. So I've actually never been given a budget. I have a proposed budget. And then I just started watching the old meetings, because what I was being told didn't add up. So I started watching old budget meetings to figure out what was promised, what was explained, what was told versus what we know. And so in that process, you know, I'm just looking for the truth. I don't even know what it is yet. I'm just looking for what's true. So I've asked for the budgets, and I have not received them. I've asked for staff reports and was told not to ask the departments, but to go through the city manager's office. And when I did, there were missing pages that just so happened to be the exact missing pages that I needed. Again, I was told I'm taking up too much people's time in this process, so I don't have everything that I need, right, to know everything. I don't have it all, but I do have enough to have a picture of what I believe is happening. So, and I have a ton of concerns that we are not experiencing the air quotes transparency that we pride ourselves on having. It's part of our 5 pillars. And so
you mean the city of Reading?
The city of Reading, like, there's a standard that we have said is our priority, and transparency is one of them. And I would say that through this process, it's not been perfect, and I have not experienced that transparency. Now, maybe I'll get it now. But the fact is, I'm not an accountant, but I am responsible. I'm responsible for the decisions that I'm making, and the response of it's complicated is just not adequate when I have to make decisions. And the public should be able to see all these documents and have a vague understanding of what we're basing our decisions off of. So I have a lot more questions than answers, and I've been asking a lot of questions. In fact, I spent 4 hours on Thursday with our elected finance director, and I learned some things that I was not aware of and that I guarantee the public was also not aware of.
Well yeah, but I want to say one thing, too, because I talked to Greg Robinette, who's the elected city treasurer. I talked to him yesterday. I think he was at the dump. Great guy. I almost called him a great kid, but because he played for me in junior high, 6th through 8th grade. He played on a team at Parsons, the greatest junior high boys team ever. And he and I asked him, I said, hey, Greg, what percentage of your salary is – as an elected official, and what percentage of your salary is as the finance director? And he was great about this, very transparent. He said his salary as an elected is like $600 a month, and the rest of his pay is as the finance director. I said, oh, it was interesting, because when you're an elected official, you answer to the people. Well, and I don't think Greg is nefarious in any way, but I want to make sure people understand that, and I just learned this for myself, so I want to bring it up, that it's not a true elected official in the sense that, I mean, it's different. The only person, people, that can get myself and fire me is the people. Greg, yeah, I mean, I guess he could be recalled, but he's going to be the finance director. And he's still – so there's a hierarchy of how that has to go. Barry Tippin is his boss. I just want to make sure people understand that. Barry Tippin is his boss. At the end of the day, his paycheck comes from the city of Reading wholeheartedly, and Barry Tippin is his boss. Ms. Audette, go ahead.
There's an entire show that we could talk about, the ballot measure that was put on to separate those, you know what I mean, to make them one, but they're separate right now.
No, I know. We have 15 minutes. So I know we have a lot to get through, so go ahead.
So we could talk about that another time. Okay, so here's what I found out that I don't think that other people know.
Okay.
Since the budget was amended by the previous council in February of 2022, which is before I was elected.
Who was on the council in 22? That was Reznor, Schrader, Mazzano, DeQuisto, and
Winter.
Winter. Okay, thank you.
Okay, so since Since that council approved these budgets, we have been burning through cash every year, year over year, meaning we have been using your reserves to pay for the raises and the new hires that the council gave.
Your reserves mean the city,
the
taxpayers.
City, the taxpayers. So last year alone, in 23-24, which was the first full year after all the raises.
From 22.
Yeah, that went over the course of that following year. They were continuing to give raises to all, which we know because it's in that audit summary. They were bringing people up to, they were not just giving raises, they were bringing people up to market rate. That's their words. So last year alone, the first full year after all of these raises have been actualized, we burned through $7.6 million in reserves.
Crazy.
That's 1 year.
And I remember in 22, everyone was just saying that, I won't even get into the politics of it. Go ahead. So, I mean, you know, so I know you don't have all the information yet, but and you want to be as accurate as possible. So what do you believe is happening?
Okay. So if I have to – I don't have all the information, but what I have so far is what I believe is that there was never a surplus in 2022. Like we were told, oh, we had two huge years of surplus, and so we are changing projections. And so what I found is I don't think there was ever a surplus in 2022. I think that they put COVID money in the bank and called it surplus. And because city finance is complicated, quote unquote, we had higher than average years in 2021, well, fiscal year ending 21 because of stimulus checks and such, right? The council was convinced by our city manager that the changes to the projections were real. Meaning without those changes to the revenue projections, there's no way that these raises would have penciled out. So the COVID-only influx of cash is one-time money, and it wouldn't be able to – you wouldn't be able to raise the 10-year projections just on that one-time money.
No.
So they had to convince the council to raise the revenues enough to justify citywide raises for every unit. And now that none of those projections have come true, we've been digging a hole deeper and deeper. Does that make sense? So they basically, the story that was told was, oh, we've done great year over year. We are beating projections. We're doing great. We've had a surplus, right? You've heard the word surplus.
Well, politicians, yeah. I mean,
Come to find out there wasn't a, I don't believe with the amount of paperwork that I've seen from the staff reports and from what is in the official record, I don't see a surplus of sales to spending. I see a surplus of COVID injected money, which we call ARPA, which is the American Rescue Plan Act, which is the Biden bucks. We got COVID money, $18 million in total, but it came in tranches, and it shows up on the books in that March of 22. In February, they vote to allocate it, to give it, you know, to well, actualize and, it. And then March, they back change projections.
Yeah.
So if they didn't, so they're changing projections, not on these incredible sales tax increases, which there was sales tax increases, but there was also spending increases.
Yeah. And I'm pretty sure the council was a split vote. If what I was reading and looked back on that, as we talked about that this week, I believe it was Schrader, Winters, and Reznor voted yes, and Mazzano and DeQuisto, I believe, initially voted no. I'll have to fact check that. But
so,
go ahead.
Yeah. So I watched the February meeting. I have not watched the March meeting. I've only gone through the staff reports of the March meeting. But what it looks like in the February meeting, when they're basically going to go with this plan before they actually vote on it, because as you know, in politics, they talk, or in council stuff, they talk about it. Then it comes back and they actually vote on it.
Yep.
So it's like, do we have consensus? Do we want that? And on the changes to projections in February, it was a 5-0.
Okay.
On the how the ARPA money was going to be spent, which is preliminary because that has changed many times, and ARPA money, again, is COVID money from the federal government, how that allocated out, that changed many times. That has had many iterations. That first iteration of, hey, this is where we think we should spend that money, that was a 3-2 vote. And and on the issue of DeQuisto wanted there to be money that went to Airport Road to have a better entrance for people that are coming into the city, he wanted some of the ARPA money to be spent on that, and when they said no, he voted against it.
Okay. So yeah, instead, and I don't want to spend...
Watch the march and see when they actually did it, what were the votes.
So where does that leave us now? So you have these beliefs of what's happening. And I think it's, I mean, just the fact that the story has been publicly, it's a $5 million deficit, and it's actually, I think, 7.7.
Okay.
Or, go ahead.
In fiscal year ending 2023, it's between 2 and 3 million. In fiscal year 23-24, we believe it's about 7.6. And for this last year, we're looking at about 4. So, I mean, we are burning through cash.
Yeah.
Burning through cash. What we know for sure is it's at least, you know, around $10 million just between fiscal year ending 23 and fiscal year 24.
So at the county, and I don't know how the city does it, at the county, any budget amendment has to go before the board. So no money can be moved. None. So without a board vote. So at the city of Reading, so there's obviously burning through this cash. It's dipping into reserves. Is it your belief that the city manager has moved money around without the council's approval? And maybe that's okay at the city of Reading. I don't know.
But
how is that covered up? How is that not caught?
Okay.
Don't you guys have bank statements?
No. Well, it wouldn't look like that, right? Like, okay, what I have learned subsequently is that there is one document that I believe it would be the only indicator of what the reality is, sort of, because again, they're going to tell you it's complicated. That's the answer to anything that they don't want to explain is it's complicated. And it's like, well, it's only complicated to look at it, but it shouldn't be complicated to explain.
Exactly.
Because if I'm making the decisions, you better help me to understand it.
Well, they don't want you making the decisions.
Well, we are to blame. We are the ones. And so it's how that is framed up. And so, you know, there's a lot of things we could go into, details of a lot of things, and I will. And that's sort of the point is this update is it is not looking good. It looks like we basically made projections. Like we took an influx of COVID money and then basically bumped up projections because of that. We're told it's a surplus, but it was not a surplus. The 21-20, the fiscal year ending in 23 was not a surplus, or 22 was not a surplus. They put in after the fact, they put in COVID money and then called that a surplus.
Yeah.
So there wasn't a surplus year where it would justify this type of spending. There was an increase of sales tax. Great. But you also spent more.
Yeah.
So you would still be at a deficit unless you infuse this money, because you're looking at this document. It's a 10-year plan. So what I would say is, as I'm going through this, I'm writing out, like, this is a change of city ordinance. This is a change. I'm going to propose we change this ordinance. We need to change this ordinance, because I'm trying to figure out, in addition to what happened, how to prevent it from happening again, and how do I arm the next city council members to say, here's what you look for when it comes to the budget. Here's where you verify what they're telling you. And here's at these, you know, where at, if it's going to be monthly, if it's going to be quarterly, where do you say, like, tell me what my cash on hand is like. Is that the best indicator if we're on track?
Bingo.
Yeah. So I'm documenting that, and I'm trying to, like, keep up with that. But, like, Now what? We lose cops, we lose firefighters, and we lose our shirts every time somebody retires.
Yeah.
Because the increase to our pension liabilities
is out of hand.
It was steadily increasing. Then it took a dip, and then it just exploded.
Well, see, and here's where
this is why you get to 7 million.
Exactly. And this is the thing that you know, where I will say Patrick Jones really endeared himself to me very early on as I learned about this process. Is that the city of Reading, you know, he was very much supported by cops and law enforcement with his history and owning a gun shop and his family. And then when the recession hit and he just asked the police, hey, maybe don't take your raise or let's readjust that. And it was like, absolutely not. And then he became kind of vilified about, like, oh, he's this just anti-government whatever. But he was ringing the bell about the unfunded pension liabilities and some of this stuff. And then over time, he has been saying this. Now, people might not like the way he articulates things, and I don't think he's the most refined individual, but all of us, I think at the end of the day, really just want our government to operate as lean as possible, deliver the best services, and we shouldn't be attacked. I mean, if people don't like our politics, you know, but focus on the policy stuff, because what you're bringing up, Tanessa, is this is catastrophic for Reading, and I don't know that people understand it. And we've had three examples now, one with Ron Owens at the beginning, mine with this air pollution control board issue that's going to come to really rear its ugly head on Tuesday publicly, and then with what you're talking about at the city. If people don't start really paying attention and who they're voting for and who these department heads are that we're overseeing in the work that they're doing, it's just going to keep getting worse. You know?
Yeah, let me say a couple things to that.
Sure.
So I think that – so I teach a God and government class, right? So like – and really the goal to me is to rightly explain from a perspective of Jesus loves everybody and we should all be socialists and, you know, Jesus would have done this and Jesus – it's like, that's great. Jesus was a pastor, a rabbi, obviously the Messiah, all those things. Thank you for being raised from the dead. Okay, all those things. But government has a different role to play. Government is different, right? In Romans, it says that God, you know, leads the church with a staff, but he leads government with a sword, which means you're going to die if you do something wrong. Like, you know what I mean? It's just a very different set of rules when it comes to how you lead in government. And it says, woe to you who, you know, break the law. You will be punished. So there's a very different standard when it comes to government. And so in my class, the first thing I say the very first day is, listen, you will be offended, you will be confused, you will be all of those things. I want you to meet that occasion with curiosity. I do not want you to shut down, defend yourself, whatever. Just be curious. And I would say, I would tell everybody that gets into office, you need to be curious. The fact is that you are in tension with staff, not because you want to, not because you don't like them, but because you have totally different goals and objectives. They are not going to watch the budget. That's our job. They are going to manage the budget, but we are the watchdogs of that. We are the oversight. We are the accountability, which creates a dispute. It creates this tension between the two, which you have to manage because it's not personal. But the fact is that the taxpayers are counting on us to be the watchdog. They're counting on us to do that. And when there's a problem, we have to confront it, and we can't be told, be polite, be kind, you know, sit down, don't complain, don't do this, because it's that doesn't help. So we have to be argumentative sometimes. We're going to have to be confrontational. It's going to get uncomfortable, but that's our job. Now, on the other side, for all the people that have said that we gave, you know, 40% raise to the city manager, that we gave all this stuff, it's just not accurate, and it's also not helpful. So when you say outlandish things, it's easy to dismiss it. Now, I've absorbed all of that. I've listened. I've verified, because I was told, you know, all kinds of things. When you come in, the whole grievance parade comes, and all the people that have ever been wronged by the city come to you. I've kept that in mind. But when Patrick Jones says unfunded liabilities, that isn't specific enough for me to know.
No, exactly.
What to do with that.
So here's
And I've asked questions, and I it's complicated.
Yeah.
So it's like, well, someone has to say what to look for. And what I've done is deep dive probably 40 hours per week for the last – I've probably spent 80 hours just diving into all this stuff so that I can have better questions, understand, and know what these words mean.
And the reason why we get into these situations like the Air Pollution Control Board and what you're doing there is because people don't do the work.
Correct.
They want to get in office because they like to cut the ribbons. They like the pancake breakfasts, and I'm not taking a dig at Supervisor Kellstrom. He does go to a lot of pancake breakfasts, but he does the work. And the only way we're going to hit the reset button and really – and I'm going to do something on my Facebook Live tomorrow and talk about Trump's 2017 inaugural address when he talks about returning the power back to the people. It's not a transition from one party to another or transition of power, but it's really a transition of power back to the people. And what he's talking about there really is that we haven't had it for a really, really long time. And I believe right now in Shasta County, we're seeing a renaissance or a resurgence of power and information getting back to the people. I think you, Tanessa, at the city are leading an effort, whether you're doing it by yourself or maybe a couple other council people are going to jump on and do the work with you. I don't know. I know at the county I've had that. I've had our CEO, our county council, and other supervisors, Long, Plummer, and Harmon, have all stepped in and done a great job. So I feel like the burden is much lighter because they're doing the work and they're asking the questions. And I hope the work that you're doing at the city of Reading is only championed by the community, because – as the city of Reading goes, the county goes, because the city of Reading is the largest municipality. That's where the majority of things happen, not that District 5 and Shingletown and Cottonwood or Lakehead aren't super important, but the city of Reading is the anchor. We're going to get to the bottom of this. Follow me on Vote Kevin Cry on Facebook and VoteKevinCry.com for updates, and we're going to be talking much more. Tanessa, thank you, and have a great Sunday.
Yes, I'll make sure your Doge hat. Doge Reading.
All right. Thank you.
Get one to you.
Have a great Sunday.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.